In Exodus chapter 3, verse 11, it says this, "But Moses said to God, 'Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt?'" David wondered. In 2 Samuel 7, 18, it says, "Then King David went in and sat before the Lord and said, 'Who am I, O Lord God? And what is my house that you have brought me thus far?'" Paul wondered. Ephesians 3, 8, "To me, though I am the very least of all the saints, this grace was given to preach to the Gentiles the unsearchable riches of Christ." And last week we learned that Ruth wondered as well. She said, "Why have I found favor in your eyes?" This week we'll pick up in verse 14 of chapter 2. Let's read that. Ruth chapter 2, verse 14. "And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, 'Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine.' So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her roasted grain, and she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, 'Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also pull some from the bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her.' So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned, and she also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, 'Where did you glean today, and where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you.' So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, 'The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz.' And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, 'May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead.' Naomi also said to her, 'The man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers.' And Ruth the Moabite said, 'Besides, he said to me, "You shall keep close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest." And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, 'It is good, my daughter, that you go out with the young women, lest in another field you may be assaulted.' So she kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and the wheat harvests. And she lived with her mother-in-law." All right, there, it's a long passage. We'll try to get through all of that before the Christmas service starts tonight at 6. So we continue the story today at lunchtime. After that initial exchange between our two main characters last week, we assume that Ruth went about her gleaning. She had received permission to do that, so she went and started working. And we just assume that Boaz went about his normal business. But it says here that he returned shortly before lunch, where we pick up in verse 14. It says, "At mealtime, Boaz said to her, 'Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine.' So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her roasted grain, and she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over." So here we seem to see this theme continue, and that is of the kindness of Boaz. As he, in this instance, rather than being a business transaction where he just says, "Here, you can glean in this field," he's expressing hospitality to Ruth, inviting her to eat with his workers. Yet another act of grace toward Ruth. And his generosity is further expressed by the fact that she had enough not only to eat until she was full, but to have some left over. Now, this pattern is evident in other biblical stories. We see about this provision of food until there's some left over. It's almost a custom there. The provider of the meal knows that his guests have had enough when those dining have some left over. I guess when they stop eating and they have some left, you know that the meal has been sufficient. And this is mentioned specifically in a couple of places in Scripture. We see that Elisha fed 100 men with 20 loaves in 2 Kings 4:4. And then we see where Jesus, of course, fed 5,000 with 5 loaves in John chapter 6. And in both of those cases, the amount left over was significant. And that showed that the supply of food had been abundant. And that's what Boaz was demonstrating in this as well. It also shows that the people really had enough to eat. And I don't know if you've ever been at a meal where maybe there wasn't enough, a potluck or something like that. There's not quite enough food, so you, being polite, will abstain or limit what you eat so everyone else can have some. Well, that would not be the case in this meal. In this meal, everybody ate all that they wanted and was satisfied. They were full and there was food left over. This little episode here at lunch, though, also demonstrates the thoughtfulness of Ruth, because it says that she, we may not know this yet, it doesn't really appear until verse 18, but she kept back what was left over to take to Naomi. So we'll see that in a bit. It shows us her thoughtfulness and kindness as well. Now again, I've asked several times, and I'm going to ask you a couple of times this morning to try to put yourself in their place, in the place of these characters. You have to think that maybe Ruth recognized that for once she had enough to eat. The joy of having enough to eat is hard for us to, it's a hard concept for us to grasp because we are so affluent. We eat until we're satisfied 3 times a day, and we have snacks in between. But you have to imagine a foreigner coming in, a widow, to be able to eat to the point where she was satisfied and to have food left over to take home. That was quite a feast. The text here mentions that Boaz passed to her roasted grain. And I read a story, I'll just share this with you. This is a description, it's almost a travelogue of the area from 1841. And it says, in one field, as we approached Kubeyabe, which is thought to be near Emmaus, you should be familiar with the name Emmaus, nearly 200 reapers and gleaners were at work, the latter being nearly as numerous as the former. A few were taking their refreshment and offered us some of their parched corn. In the season of harvest, the grains of wheat not yet fully dry and hard are roasted in a pan or on an iron plate and constitute a very palatable article of food. This is eaten with bread or instead of it. Indeed, the use of it is so common at this time among the laboring classes that this parched wheat is sold in the markets, and it was among our list of articles to be purchased at Hebron for our journey to Wadi Musa. The Arabs, it was said, prefer it to rice, but this we did not find to be the case. The whole scene of the reapers and gleaners and their parched corn gave us a lively representation of the story of Ruth and the ancient harvest time in the fields of Boaz. That's from a periodical called Biblical Researches from 1841. So that was the scene. And so here we see that Ruth ate her bread, she dipped it in this wine vinegar, and she ate her roasted grain, and then she packed up her leftovers to take home later to Naomi. So we move on to verse 15. And we see even more kindness here from Boaz. Verse 15, when she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also pull out some from the bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her. Now it's possible that Boaz gave these instructions within the hearing of Ruth, so that she would know the freedom she was being given. We don't know that, but that's possible. But by allowing her to glean from among the sheaves, what he is saying is he's guaranteeing a better harvest for her. Because this space among the sheaves, what he's talking about is He's distinguishing this area from that outside the area of the harvesters, the line of the harvesters. So here, in this line, you'd have the harvesters cutting, and you'd have those coming behind, picking up and bundling. He allowed her to follow directly behind them, because that's where the most dropped stalks of grain would be. And this would also be the area where unscrupulous gleaners would try to sneak in, and that's why he told his men not to reproach her. He was allowing her to be in there in that line. But Boaz isn't finished just by that. He's not just saying, allow her to glean here. It seems like his kindness toward Ruth grows every time he talks to her or every time he talks about her. Because now he instructs his workers to take out some of the grain from their bundles and leave it for Ruth to glean, leave it for her to pick up. He was, in fact, by doing this, allowing her to glean more than the Mosaic law required of him. You know, the law, we read this a few weeks ago, it directed the reaper not to pick up a sheaf accidentally dropped in Deuteronomy 24:19. But here, Boaz goes further and orders his men to leave grain purposefully. Dr. Andrew Thompson comments on this passage, and this is a lost quality today among many people. Let me read to you what he says. It was a thoughtful and delicate form of kindness to Ruth, thus to increase her gleanings and yet make them all appear the fruit of her own industry. There are persons to be met with in social life who, while possessing the more solid qualities of moral excellence, are singularly deficient in the more graceful. They have honesty, but they have no sensibility. They have truth, but they are strangely wanting in tenderness. They are distinguished by whatsoever things are just and pure, but not by those which are lovely and of good report. But the conduct of Boaz, as we stand and hear him giving these directions to his reapers, proves the compatibility of those two forms of excellence, and how the strong and the amiable may meet and harmonize in the same character. Indeed, they do always meet in the highest form of moral greatness. So here, Boaz is allowing Ruth to glean more without her knowing that his men are up there, however far, 50 yards ahead of her, intentionally dropping grain for her to pick up. That's grace to her. It's not demeaning. It's as if she's just very successful as a gleaner. So let's see how Ruth does. Verse 17. So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. So we see she gleaned all day, which we would expect her to do. She's a very industrious young woman. And then she beats out the grain, sometimes with a rod, maybe with just a rock. We don't know. They don't tell us. She's not a professional harvester, so she will not have the tools that the harvesters do. She just uses what she can find. And then it says, when she finished, it says she had about an ephah. So I guess the natural question is, how much is an ephah? Well, an ephah probably weighed between 28 and 30 pounds. It would have been a massive amount to gather in one day. Now, we're not talking about stalks and all. She's already beat out the grain, so this is just the grain. So picture the large-sized dog food bag that you buy at Sam's. That is more or less how much grain she had from one day of gleaning. Some people even estimate it to be closer to 50 pounds. But it would have been a startling quantity of grain for a gleaner. And it testifies both to Boaz's generosity and to Ruth's industry. Just for context, the daily ration for a hired laborer was slightly more than 2 pounds of cereal. And you would presume that a gleaner would be able to gather even less than that. So let's see what happens next. We'll see that she comes home to Naomi. This is verse 18. It says, and she took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today, and where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz." And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Naomi also said to her, "The man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers." And Ruth the Moabite said, "Besides, he said to me, 'You shall keep close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest.'" And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted." We'll just pause right there. So Ruth goes back home and shows Naomi how she did. Shows her all 30 pounds of grain. And again, let me ask you to try to put yourself in the place this time of Naomi. Can you imagine waiting anxiously throughout the day, the whole time Ruth is gone, waiting for her to return? You can imagine maybe the sense of insecurity that she felt, facing an unknown future, a future that she's already maybe realized is offering her nothing but hunger and despair. This attitude, this foreboding air that Naomi certainly must have felt, just adds to her surprise when Ruth comes back with all of that grain and the leftover roasted grain as well. I mean, imagine her delight to receive not only an abundant supply of barley, but a prepared meal. I mean, it's one thing for someone to bring over to your house, you know, 50 pounds of beans and rice. It's another for them to cook something for you and bring it, right? She got both, not 50 pounds, but 20 or 30. So naturally, Naomi's question, her first question is the same one you would have asked and I would have asked, and that is, "Where did you get this?" I mean, I can just imagine, did you go gleaning or did you rob a barley truck? Where did you get 28, 30, 50 pounds of barley, one woman, picking up the scraps after the harvesters? It's almost impossible. Immediately after she asks this question, she pronounces a blessing upon whomever this is, not even knowing his identity. Then Ruth tells Naomi, "The man's name is Boaz." Ruth didn't know the family relation of Boaz. It's really kind of an entertaining irony that in many places in this story, the reader knows more than the characters know. We know it all because we're reading it, but in this particular case, Naomi didn't know that Ruth had gleaned in Boaz's field. And Ruth didn't know that Boaz was a close relative. And it all kind of comes together right here as they figure out what the other one knows. So when Naomi hears that the man was Boaz, she pronounces yet another blessing in verse 20. She says, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." And we're going to come back to that in just a moment, but I want to remind you about the nature of these blessings. These were taken very seriously in biblical narratives. So when God bestowed a blessing upon someone, it meant that he gave that person success. And so that's what people are asking God to do when they pronounce these blessings. We don't want to allow our modern usage, I mean, when's the only time we hear someone say, "God bless you"? It's when we sneeze. So don't allow the way we in Western culture have trivialized the idea to carry over to this Old Testament narrative, because it was much more serious. A blessing was very serious. In fact, it's a major theme in the book of Genesis where a family's blessing was important enough, a father's blessing was important enough to create family strife and envy, and even led to the threat of murder. In Genesis chapter 27, verse 41, we see Esau pledged to himself, basically, to kill Jacob. But blessing was more than just a good wish. It implied the power to succeed. I'm asking God to empower you to succeed. So Naomi had recognized that the generosity of Boaz deserved recognition. And she was asking that God would reward that, would give him success and repay him for his generosity to Ruth. Now there's a phrase in here that probably demands our attention a little bit. And at the risk of getting too technical with the language, let's look at this phrase. It's in verse 20. Let me reread that. It says, "May he be blessed by the Lord." Now we get that. But then it says, "whose kindness has not forsaken the living nor the dead." So the question is, who does whose refer to? Whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead? May he be blessed by the Lord. Is it saying, may he, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead, be blessed? Or is it saying, may he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness, the kindness of the Lord, has not forsaken the living or the dead? I think to understand this, we have to establish whether Naomi's exclamation here, does it relate to the large amount of grain, or does it relate to the realization that this is Boaz that is helping right now? If she was referring to the grain, then obviously the person whose kindness is referred to would be Boaz. If she's referring to the fact that God has ordained that Boaz and Ruth providentially meet in this way, then the kindness she's referring to is the kindness of God. And boy, there's huge debate. If you like to debate, just go buy a couple of commentaries on Ruth and start reading. Because some, they argue on both sides. And it could be that both are true, both were kind. I land on the side that she's referring in this statement to God, because she's already asked God to bless the person who provided all this grain before she knew who it was. But now she does know who it is, and so she says, may he be blessed by the Lord, and I believe whose kindness is referring back to the Lord. But whichever way you fall on that, you have to understand that this is probably a turning point in the story for Naomi, because up until this point, feeling forsaken by God was one of the main themes of the book whenever we referred to Naomi. She had accused God of dealing bitterly with her. Remember, she didn't want to be called Naomi anymore. She wanted to be called Mara, because God has dealt bitterly. He has set his hand against me. Now, this news of this providential accident where Ruth and Boaz somehow meet, somehow she ended up in his field. That has rekindled her confidence in God. She realized that in spite of all that had happened, God had not forsaken her, but he was still showing faithfulness to her and to her family. This meeting between these two was a sign to her, perhaps, that God had not forgotten about them. And the word in there for kindness is the old familiar hesed. We've covered that in here before. It really can be defined as faithful love or covenant love. Naomi's faith had been challenged. I mean, you remember when she returned to Bethlehem from Moab, she freely admitted that she was quite disappointed with God, and that's being kind to her. She was much more than just disappointed. She was angry. But now we kind of see that her faith may be rekindled. That small flame has been rekindled by what has happened, because she's become aware again of the fact that far from forsaking her, God was at work providing for her through her foreign daughter-in-law, who she begged to stay in Moab. I love the irony of this. Naomi wanted both of the daughters-in-law to stay home. She felt so bad. God had been, so unfair to her that she didn't want to be a burden on them. She said, "You guys just stay home. I'll go back to my people. Maybe someone will be nice to me." But this Moabite daughter-in-law, who she begged to stay home, is the instrument that God is using at this point to restore the faith of Naomi. Naomi then explains to Ruth what she didn't know, and that is that Boaz was a relative of theirs, one of our redeemers. We probably need to define that. In ancient Israel, a redeemer was a male relative who was responsible for the welfare of family members. According to the laws of Leviticus is always fun to read, but in chapter 25, we see some of this, where their obligation includes things like buying back land that an impoverished family had to sell. It can be purchasing the freedom of a family who was forced to sell themselves into slavery. But there's other passages that talk about it just being a protector in a more general sense. And I think that may be what Naomi is referring to here. But anytime we see this reference to a redeemer, it should also point our eyes beyond this story, where it prefigures our redeemer. We'll see that again and again as we move forward in this book. And that earlier little grammatical ambiguity between whether it was God's kindness or Boaz's kindness, that was not an accident. I think it was a profound use of the language, because they're both true. Boaz was the means that God used in just this small way to show Naomi his goodness and his kindness. Her bitterness had hardened. It had gotten worse. She saw, perhaps, that she was under God's judgment. But when she was brought face to face with this undeniable event that showed God's goodness and grace, that hard heart began to melt. That bitterness began to melt away. And she began to realize that, contrary to what she had earlier thought, the Lord had not stopped showing his covenant faithful love, that hesed, to both her and to Ruth. So we have Boaz's lavish assistance here. It allowed Ruth to glean far more than she could have otherwise. Extraordinary amounts of grain. But even 20 to 30 pounds of barley was only enough to sustain these two women for maybe a couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks. That wasn't going to last until next year's harvest. So Ruth chapter 2, I think, is a provisional solution to their situation. Both Boaz's kindness and God's kindness address their immediate need. And their immediate need was they had nothing. They had no food or anything. And this addressed that need. If Ruth was able to glean this same amount every day during the remainder of the harvest, they would have enough to eat for several months. But still, it's only temporary. There's no long-term security here. And the storyteller, as we get to these last couple of verses, is going to notice that the harvest is over. And the storyteller also is going to notice that Ruth is living with Naomi. We'll get to those verses here in a bit. But I think that prepares us as readers to watch these women take steps for perhaps a more long-term solution, which I don't want to give the story away. You'll have to read it. So the chapter ends with this simple summary in verse 23. So she kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvests, and she lived with her mother-in-law. So she gleaned until the end of the harvest, both the barley harvest and then the wheat harvest that followed that. It's around 7 weeks. So their immediate needs were taken care of. And then it says that she lived with her mother-in-law. So she spent her time in two places. She would glean in the fields during the day and go back and sleep at Naomi's place in the evenings. So you have to wonder, as you're thinking ahead, if God had faithfully provided so abundantly for their short-term need for food, will he not supply their needs in other areas? I mean, this is especially true because we can read that the duties of a kinsman redeemer are not just financial, but they are also there to provide an heir for the family if needed. This thought, that could be what's coming, is the link that connects this chapter with the rest of the book. So as Ruth sought, let's kind of recap where we've been. So as Ruth sought to provide for Naomi's needs, God providentially guided her footsteps. Remember, we spoke of that a few weeks ago. Guided her footsteps to the field of Boaz, a potential benefactor of Elimelech, her father-in-law's, her late father-in-law's family. So impressed by her faithfulness, her loyalty was rewarded by Boaz as an instrument of God. And this, in turn, began the transformation of Naomi's attitude from bitterness to hope. That's a summary of where we've been in this chapter. So the narrator is portraying God as one who works providentially to deliver or assist the afflicted, using people to accomplish this. We don't see manna from heaven. We don't see water out of a rock like we've seen in other places in the Old Testament. Here we see God working through people to meet the needs of Ruth and Naomi. He used Boaz's kindness as his instrument. And I think there are lessons for us here. Let's look at a few of those. How about this one from Boaz and Ruth and their interaction? God still uses individuals whose concerns for others mirror his own. God still uses people to meet needs whose concerns for other people mirror his own concerns for them. So this is a lesson both regarding our willingness to help others and our willingness to receive help from others. We've covered in the past that God expects his people to share his concerns for the needy and the marginal and the overlooked. But I'm going to tell you this. I've been on both sides of the fence here. There have been times in mine and Dana's life where we made enough money to help other people, in some cases significantly. But then there have been times in our life through illness where we were forced to accept help from other people. And let me just tell you, the easier of the two is giving. Receiving help is humbling. And we all say we want to be humble. We just don't want to be humbled. So it's difficult to be on the receiving end of other people's generosity, the generosity of people just like Boaz. If Ruth had been too proud to accept that, no telling what might have happened to her and Naomi. But sometimes we do find ourselves in that mindset of Naomi, where we feel like God is against us. Hopefully, when we recognize the hand of God at work in our experience through these other people who can help meet that need with us, that can push that despair aside, just like it did for Naomi. And I'm not talking about the power of positive thinking here. We're not even going to go there. What I'm talking about is the realization that the God you thought was working against you is actually working for you. And he's doing that through Christian brothers and sisters. He often uses the people around us as instruments in his cause of providing for us. Which leads me to what I think is the ultimate application from Ruth so far. And I think we can learn this from Naomi. And that is, when God's hand is hidden, we do not need to assume that it's absent. When God's hand is hidden, do not assume that it's absent. When Naomi returned to Bethlehem at the end of chapter 1, by listening to what she said, it appeared she had given up on God completely. She stated that God had dealt bitterly or harshly with her. She believed that he was actually working against her. But now, at the end of chapter 2, we can see that God was working the entire time. Not against her, but for her. I mean, just look at some of these circumstances. Ruth insisted on returning with her to Bethlehem over Naomi's objections. Ruth decided to go to work gleaning in the fields to provide food for the two of them. Ruth just happened to wander into the field of Boaz, who was a relative of her deceased father-in-law. Boaz's gracious generosity provided the two of them with the food that they needed. And then the fact that he was a relative restored hope to Naomi that he could possibly be a redeemer. So God was orchestrating all of these chance encounters, all of these divine coincidences, to accomplish his purpose for both Ruth and Naomi. His hand was hidden, but it wasn't absent. So as I close, I'm going to ask our musicians to come to the front. Before we finish, I want to ask you where you are today. Are you in despair like Naomi? I mean, this has been one of those years, right, that there's lots of it. There's lots of hurt. Maybe friends or family members are ill, or maybe you even lost friends or family members in the pandemic. But maybe for you it isn't that deadly serious, but it's still troubling to you. Maybe it's just this season. Maybe you can't or you shouldn't be with the people you want to be with this Christmas. Maybe you see the world is out of control, and so God's hand is surely absent. But I'm here to tell you this morning that his hand is not absent. It's only hidden. Just as with Ruth, God will providentially guide your footsteps to accomplish his purposes for your life. So what's our role? Our role is to trust. Our job is to trust. You know the old hymn, "Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey." A man named Daniel Towner composed the music to that hymn. And he tells the story of a revival meeting by the famous D.L. Moody. And this story, he tells the story, it was originally told by Moody's musical partner, Ira Sankey, who sang at those crusades. Here's what Ira Sankey said. "Mr. Moody was conducting a series of meetings in Brockton, Massachusetts, and I had the pleasure of singing for him there. One night, a young man rose in a testimony meeting and said, 'I am not quite sure, but I'm going to trust and I'm going to obey.' I just jotted that sentence down and sent it with a little story to the Reverend J.H. Sammis, a Presbyterian minister. He wrote the hymn, and the tune was born." So we've studied the story of Ruth, but we have something in common with Ruth and with Naomi, and that is that life is complicated. We all have questions. We all have questions like why or how. or when. And so I'll close by just saying, I'm not quite sure. But I'm going to trust and I'm going to obey. Let's pray together.